Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Gregory Crawford on Basketball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Pacific time. And a little warning in advance, you have to bear with me tonight. I've got an April cold. I don't get colds hardly ever, but when I get them, they are awful. So my voice is a little bad. I apologize for that, but we're going to get through it. I never miss stuff. I don't like missing work, and I don't like missing these Blog Talk Radio programs. You can follow me on Twitter, at WC Hoops, and I don't know whether you'll like it or not, but I do tweet quite a bit when I have time. But being that it's we moved into April, and this is the first Wednesday in April, that means that per each month, we bring on the outstanding basketball coach at Willamette University. Willamette is a member of the Northwest Conference, I think probably an original member of the Northwest Conference, and located in beautiful Salem, Oregon. And it's Kip Iohn, the men's basketball coach there. Kip, how are you doing tonight?
Excellent, Greg. Sorry to hear you're under the weather a little bit, but you sound good to me.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Kip, I'm going to do something a little different tonight. I didn't tell you. Start out a little different. I'm going to ask you some real rapid-fire questions, then we'll get into Willamette basketball and some other things. Who's your favorite musician?
My favorite musician of all time is Tupac.
All right, very good. And why?
I think it's from when I was young. I mean, I just obviously not all of his music is appropriate for the audience out there, but there's a lot of it that was a great message despite some of the things he chose to do himself. It's just really resonated with me throughout, man, probably since I was 10 years old.
What's your favorite food?
Tacos. Any shell, any version, as many as I can get down in a setting.
Now, tomorrow at Adventist Medical Center, where I work in the cancer unit, we have our taco bar. About it, though, our food in our cafeteria is vegetarian. It's all vegetarian.
Oh. So,
but it still
so
tastes
like
good.
Tofu?
No, it's kind of the fake hamburger. Yeah, we have some tofu from time to time.
Okay.
It's very good food. You would enjoy it very much. I'm going to have it up for lunch some Thursday. And
there you go.
I'll even
excellent.
Buy. Okay, what's your favorite city to visit in the state of Oregon besides Salem?
Oh, great.
Not do you visit there?
Right. I would have to say probably Portland for myself. But my wife is from Scappoose, so I enjoy when we get to go up to her parents' property. They have a big, huge spread, and my kids, all three of them, just love to take off, and we won't see them for hours because there's a ton of trees, swings, and exploring they can go do at her parents' place.
Outside of basketball, what is your favorite sport to play if you play any sports at this time?
If I could still play, I would play football. I was a multi-sport athlete, football. You know, being Samoan, football is kind of in your genes, so to speak. I'm one of the few skinny Samoans that decided to play basketball. So, absolutely, football season's a great time. And we even have, on my coach's staff, we still have an intramural flag football team we play on here at Willamette. So, that's always a good time.
The Samoans, one of the greatest tag teams ever in professional wrestling.
Absolutely. And don't forget The Rock as well, you know, so.
Yeah, you were surprised that I knew that, didn't you?
I love it. That is all. We got Tupac and the Samoans on the same radio show right now. We're doing really well. I love it.
What's your favorite kind of car? Convertible, SUV with the kids? What do you like the most if you had
when
your
I was
car?
Younger, I probably would have told you some version of an SUV. But I'm honest to God, I'm going to say that I really enjoy our minivan because it is so practical. And with our family of our three kids and my wife and I and the dogs usually along for the ride, and there's two bikes and a jogger stroller, we need all that room, and somehow you fit and you fit comfortably in that thing.
And in the state of Oregon, and you can add on to that, favorite place to vacation, period, which doesn't necessarily have to be in Oregon.
Oh, okay. You know, in Oregon itself, I love the coast. And then overall, I'm a Vegas guy. I really enjoy Las Vegas.
That is funny. You gave the same answer that I would give. And in conclusion, who do you think is my favorite musician of all time?
Ooh.
Most people never guess it.
Wow. I'm going to say, can I go genre maybe? I think you are some version of, maybe you're a jazz guy.
No. But I'll give you one. This guy's rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Very prominent. Probably okay. The greatest piano player ever.
Billy Joel?
How about Elton?
Oh, my goodness. There you go. There you go. You can't go wrong there.
Yeah, still going strong at 68
Absolutely.
Years of age. Yeah. Very
yes,
good.
Hey,
Kip, thank you. Great job answering
yep.
all those. It was a lot of fun to do that.
Absolutely.
How are things right now with the Willamette's basketball team? And for everybody out there is saying right now, probably scratching this, what is Greg asking that question for? Well, I'm asking it because it won't be long before we'll be in 16-17.
Exactly. Well, you know, we just wrapped up yesterday. We got our fifth and final recruit for this class that we wanted to bring in. We got the commitment that we needed from that player. So, technically, we are going towards 16-17. We've still got a senior banquet that the department does a great job putting on to make sure we send our seniors out the right way from all sports, and then they'll walk across the stage and graduate, and that'll be kind of the end of 15-16. But as a staff, now that we've wrapped up recruiting, we are moving into entirely self-scout. What we did right, what we did wrong in all areas, not just on the floor, but in recruiting, in travel, in every aspect of what we did this year. As a group, we're really diving into that with the goal of using April and early May to do a great self-evaluation of ourselves, of each other, how we coach together, how we got the kids to play, and then hopefully by the middle of May all the way up to June 1, be ready to launch every aspect of 16-17. So I'd say we're on target. I like having, getting the recruiting class done right now, early April, and that gives us plenty of time as a group to really pull no punches and hopefully exist in truth and be able to talk to each other as a staff about what we did really well, what we need to do better, and what we need to throw out the window, so to speak, going forward. So I think we've got plenty of time to do that, and actually all of us are pretty excited to do that.
Kip, when you talk about self-evaluation, kind of take that further. I think everybody knows what
mm-hmm.
the term is, but how
right.
important is that? And being done more and more in the business world, when you get
mm-hmm.
a review, you usually write
yeah.
about yourself, what your own review is. It's becoming more and more
right.
prominent.
Absolutely. No, and I think it's something, my process and how we're doing it in the program has definitely evolved, and hopefully it's gotten better. Aside from the usual, I'm going to write up my assistants and give them some constructive feedback on what they did really well, what all of them can do better, especially, some of my lead assistants that want to move on in the profession. I feel like I owe them a very honest evaluation of what I could recommend for them going forward. So there's some great things that I think all of them do that are absolutely vital to making me look a lot smarter than I am. But also, if they want to move on and have programs of their own someday, there's some areas that we've talked about that they need to work on. And then for myself, boy, I try not to leave any stone unturned. We're all assigned, everything down to that specific play that we ran this many times. We got this many turnovers out of it, this many points per possession out of it. How many times did we rely on it in the second half versus the first half? I really want that detail for myself, for our team in terms of what are we going to keep going forward and what are we going to get rid of, and is there a reason for either decision? I think it's really easy to say, oh, hey, we didn't achieve what we wanted to as a team, win-loss-rise, but we just got to have the kids play better. Well, I think there's a lot that I'm finding in just going over the numbers of everything we did that I didn't do very well. I think our points per possession out of timeouts, for example, are not where they need to be, and that's on me. That's the very few times a game where I have them in a huddle and I have the whiteboard and the black marker, and why are we not better in terms of our efficiency out of that situation? that starts with the guy in the stool that everybody's staring at, and that's me. So, you know, as much as sometimes you don't like the answers you get, I think it's vital that you dive into the clips of the film, and not just for your players. You know, we had our exit meetings with our guys right before spring break, and I had lots of film clips for Brendan McCullough, our point guard, the things he could do better to avoid some turnovers, for Dylan Critchfield, our post, for Hayden Russell, our two. But if I'm going to subject them to that kind of scrutiny, I better be sure I'm doing the same thing and flipping the mirror back towards me, or I don't have a lot of credibility. So that process is full-scale goal for us right now. And there's some things I'm finding that I'm really happy with that we did. And then there's some things that I absolutely know start with me and we need to get better at.
Very good. Excellent analysis and comments there, Kip. Kip, let me ask you about, has yelling at people, players, as from a coach in athletics mm-hmm. pretty much passe anymore as we head to 2016? You just don't see it much anymore on any level, and I think it's probably good in a way.
You know, I think you can still challenge kids. As a coach, I think they still need to be challenged, but I think there's much better ways to do that. And I think hopefully in the profession, what we've all gotten better at is we're challenging the action we want corrected. We're not challenging some kid's manhood. We're not challenging some kid's integrity, with some enraged comment we make about their manhood, which is not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about the fact you traveled on that pivot step that we worked all week. I think there's some things, for our program, the things we try to do with our captains now in the spring and in the fall is we try to get a sense of, okay, as a team, what two or three things are you going to give us as a staff permission to black out on? And by black out, I mean the standard. I'm going to yell and scream and be pretty upset about these two or three things. Everything else that's not on that list of blackout moments, we're going to try to coach. We're going to try to be calm, cool, and collected together and really fix the problem rather than attacking someone. So, for us, the last couple of years, the kids have always agreed lack of effort and repeated mistakes are something we can black out on. And we even went so far as define repeating. If you're the fifth person in line of a drill and you mess up how the drill's working, you should have been paying attention. So that's something that the team gave us permission to be a little bit more intense about in correcting. But things like turnovers, things like missed shots, things like missed box outs, of course, as a coach, you know those cost you games and you're upset about them. But when you really focus on how am I going to deliver the fix to this problem rather than just cussing and yelling and throwing out as many choice words as possible, I think it makes you better. And I think this generation of kids responds to that challenge and the fixing of issues rather than just yelling and screaming to look like you're coaching really hard that day.
Excellent. Kip, about five shows ago, you talked about this subject and I must say I'm very blessed in my life to have a strong relationship business-wise and as a friendship with the great John Spoelstra, maybe one of the most successful people ever in sports without question. And he always brings up all the time, if you're on time, you're late. And you talked about people being on time about four shows ago, and your comments were awesome. Go ahead and talk a little bit about that stuff, because it's starting to burn me a little bit more and more that it's so fashionably chic to be late with people, and I hate it.
Right. No, and I think you're speaking to exactly what we're trying to teach our guys as men going forward in life is whether that's me expecting them on time for a film session or the bus that departs, for a road trip, all the way through their employer that expects them at a presentation, expects them at a business lunch, to their wife and their kids expecting you on time to pick your son up from daycare when you're supposed to. Those things are very, very important in life. So if the only thing they get out of my program is they know to be on time to things, I think we're doing something right. So I try to explain to them, aside from just, hey, the rules, I'm sure every coach in the country has examples of, hey, I expect you to be at this minute, before, early, et cetera. I try to give them as many life examples as possible of when being 2 minutes late can cost you. You know, tomorrow my son gets off the bus. My son's three, but he rides the bus home from his daycare. I can't be here at 12:48 when the bus driver said he's going to be here at 12:44. My son's 3 years old. He can't get off the bus by himself. So it doesn't matter what I was doing that was so much important that made me late. I've got to be here on time. Those type of things are very important, and I think the more you can give kids realistic examples of why their actions are a problem rather than just because it's your rule, I think the more they develop their own decision-making process. And that's something we try to stress to our recruits, and I'm sure a lot of coaches do just like us. I don't want you to make choices for the 4 years you play for me just because you know that's what I want to hear. I want you to make those choices because that's your decision-making paradigm. So when you're 24 and decide to go to a bachelor party in Las Vegas, your mom and I can both sleep comfortably knowing you'll make the right choices while having the fun you need to in life. So, you know, if it starts with being on time to team meetings, you know, I think that's where my job as a coach begins.
Kip, is your non-league schedule set yet? And not that it needs to be for 16, 17. And on top of that, have you changed your philosophy at all over being a successful coach about how you schedule non-league games? Because that's all across the board how coaches handle that part.
Oh, that's a great question. And I think that's something you try to do yearly. I think you have an overall philosophy. You know, I grew up playing for Gordy James, as assistant for Gordy James, and coach was never ducking any non-conference great opponent that he could find. If we could play the number one ranked team in all divisions every week, coach would have been great with that because he thought it got us ready for the, you know, the trials of the Northwest Conference. And there's a lot of truth in that. What I've learned now that, you know, there's the 80% rule in Division III where you got to play 80% of your schedule's got to be against Division III schools. I've learned that we're trying to find a balance. You know, we're not done yet with our non-conference schedule. We have one hole remaining, working behind the scenes a ton with a lot of different people trying to get that filled. But, you know, I think in our league, you could fill your schedule with a lot of NAIA games. You could get D2 games in the region fairly easily and probably save your travel budget. The hard part is, no matter how well or poorly you do on that schedule, it means nothing in Division III. Really, the goal is you would like to play 100% of your games Division III. And I think a lot of my colleagues in NWC would echo that. Now, that being said, the setup of Division III geographically for our league makes that almost impossible. You know, we're already playing 16 games against each other up here in Oregon and Washington. The only other league within a relatively decent travel, you know, budget-wise is the SCIAC in California. But there's a limited amount of games those people want to play against us and vice versa. So, you know, I think last year I should have been a member of the SCIAC. I think we played 5 non-conference games. We played 2 against Chapman, 1 against Laverne, Occidental, and Whittier. So that was great that we got to hook those games up, but at the same time, sooner or later, you get tired of playing each other. But the next, you know, available place for anybody in our league to get to is Colorado, where there's just one school, Colorado College. And after that, you're looking at Nebraska Wesleyan and then Minnesota, Texas, or Wisconsin. Great trips. I mean, we would love to do that as many times. I mean, my point guard's from San Antonio. I'd love to take him home to play Trinity and Mary Harden Baylor, but that's not exactly doable every year on a D3 budget, you know, and then vice versa. You want to get as many home games as you can in the non-conference schedule, especially over the time when you have students in the stands. You know, you can get some home games after finals or Thanksgiving, but then where's your crowd? You want to give your guys an environment and have such thing as a home floor advantage. So trying to get teams to come out is usually a partnership. You know, I worked with Tim Cleary a ton from Pacific getting games. I'm working with Matt Logie right now getting a game with Whitworth. I've talked to Denari a ton. I've talked to Mako, talked to Shannon. You know, all of us at some point in time, Justin and I were working on a team from Michigan. It's an interesting process. Obviously, I don't want to say it's, you know, it's not stressful as much as it is kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. Because you're talking about guarantees that you can offer. You're talking about hotel rooms. You're talking about flight budgets. And really, me not being done with it in April of the year before is not normal. Usually you're done and we're already working on 17, 18. So it's been a tougher year this year to try to finish the schedule the way we want it to be.
Kip, let me ask you a question about recruiting as far as parents are concerned. What is the most often, and maybe there isn't the most often, number one should be academics. Number two is probably about the program and where you want to be and all that. But what's the off basketball question that's most asked about parents or a parent when you're recruiting an athlete?
You know, I think at our level, parents probably jump even the first two things you mentioned, even though those are very, very common and should be asked. They jump right into what's it going to cost me? Being Division III, and a lot of times before they even let you in the door to their house or have come on campus, they've read that Division III obviously has no athletic scholarship, so they're assuming right off the bat it's super expensive and there's no way they can afford it. Well, and I think you talk to all of our coaches in our league, all of us have very good financial aid packages and academic recruiting money based on their GPA and their test scores that can make it more affordable, but families sometimes don't give you the opportunity to show them how it's more affordable. So I think that's number one is, can I afford it? What's the bottom line, coach? And then after that, it's usually mom wants to know about life on campus. Mom wants to know the support system set up for them academically, getting off to a good start as freshmen. Dad wants to know about the athletic atmosphere in terms of, who do people care about the team? Where you guys travel? Who do you play? What's the makeup of the roster coming back? That's usually the split, but you get all kinds of parents nowadays are more educated than ever, I think, about the recruiting process. So that you get people to come in with a notepad and a printed out set of 25 questions, and that's awesome. That means they've really put in a lot of time thinking about your institution, your program, and you're a serious player if they have that many questions. I think you're in trouble if you give your spiel in a recruiting room and mom and dad are like, okay, we're good, and they had nothing to ask you. I think you should probably erase that kid off your list because they're not buying what you're selling. So the more questions, the better. We've always told people.
How about your thoughts in general, and you can relate it certainly to your employer, Willamette University, lessening the requirements a little bit for some of the student athletes. And I heard a good argument on a national show the other day about lessening those requirements. And this guy said on all levels of the NCAA, and the argument that he made was that these people are carrying an extra load by being an athlete. Or you could carry it over to the debate team or anything, but your thoughts on that?
I would agree in one sense of that argument in terms of highlighting what a student athlete, whether it's basketball, football, you could probably, like you mentioned, you could expand it to extracurricular activities in general, what the time management skills that kid has to employ to be successful at your university are. I would love to see a survey done for the amount of open hours and open meaning literally there's nothing on your schedule for this hour block. For a day, I would imagine our players, the rowing team, the musicians at Willamette, I would imagine there's very, very few truly free open hours. And other students, I'm sure they're studying hard. I'm sure they're very busy as well. But you add in the 4 to 5 hours of commitment per day that we're expecting, and that really shrinks your day, especially if you're trying to sleep at some point in time. So that part I agree with. I'm not sure I'm in favor of lessening standards. I think I'm in favor of once you find kids, student athletes that fit the expectation of a place like Willamette, as far as their ability in the classroom, their ability in the dorms to be good people, their test scores, their essays, whatever it is you're measuring, the expectations of what a Willamette student looks like on paper, so to speak. Once you find those kids, I think you should have an ability to make it accessible and doable for them financially, academically, however you want to say it. If they want to be a Bearcat, they should have a way to do that. I think as many doors as you can open to the people you want to come in. So like I said, as long as we find a 397 student with the right SAT score, great essay, great character references, that may not have the financial means to pay X amount, I think we should be able to find ways, no matter who they are, even if they're not a basketball player, if they're a Willamette person, I don't think there should necessarily have to be a Willamette checkbook. And so I think that's one of the things that I think all liberal arts colleges are trying to find the balance of is being private. Tuition drives revenue, and you got to figure out ways to be financially soluble. I totally understand that. But from our end, it's tough when student athletes and families want to be Bearcats or want to go to Whitworth or want to go to Whitman.
and it's not anything they can control that's not allowing them to. So that part's tough. And that's part where I would probably, if I could wave a magic wand, find a better way to do it.
Very good. You know, besides maybe finding a woman in my life that loves basketball, you know, my bucket list includes one other thing among the priorities, Kip, is I got to have lunch with your president. How you doing on that?
That's
are you
right.
working on that?
Hey, he's been very busy, very busy. But I've got a request in to get a hold of me, and then I'll definitely bring you up.
Yeah, nobody's too busy for Greg Crawford, though. Come on now. You know, we brought in students to Willamette. You got to tell him. So
That's true.
That is very true. Anything for the good of the order. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you, Kip, before we close, and we got about 3 minutes. Did you – I was pretty adamant, active, and irritated the other day when Coach Miles once again did not make the Hall of Fame. Have you had much interaction with Coach Miles?
I did. You know, when I was on Gordy's staff, when I played at Willamette, Oregon Tech was still on the non-conference schedule for us quite a bit. And then when I was an assistant, obviously had the opportunity to coach against him and his staff. And then my first year as the head coach, had the opportunity and misfortune, you could say, of playing one of his teams and getting a lesson in game preparation, and they beat us pretty handily. But I think his resume speaks for itself. Absolutely.
Yeah, and quite frankly, the greatest thing I think of all his accomplishments besides 1,000 wins is 10 30-win seasons. Very hard to do
in that league, and just the evolution of the conference that he's been in, it's always been good. There's never been a year that league has been considered down. You know, it's always been very deep, very tough road trips, very high-quality teams and other coaches. So those 1,000 wins are unbelievable.
Kip, in finalizing, how can people get a hold of you? I mean, so many people comment. You are a tremendous interview. I've been interviewing people now since I was 12 years old and worked for the Selwood Bee in my neighborhood. I grew up in Selwood in Portland, and you're one of the best ever. You're just tremendous.
Well, you're giving me a great question. So your experience is paying off, guiding me along. But, you know, the best way to get a hold of me, my Willamette, you know, my phone's always buzzing with Willamette email. So KIOANE@willamette.edu. And then all the social media platforms. Obviously, if you're following at WC Hoops, you'll see at Coach Ione and Bearcat Hoop is on there. That's our Willamette feed. We're on Instagram, Woo Pro Hoop, and then we're on Facebook as well, facebook.com/Bearcat Hoop. So any of those, absolutely. You want to talk about the Bearcats or any questions about what we're doing in Salem, more than happy to exchange information and talk with people about it.
Tremendous. I can hardly wait for the first Wednesday in May. Boy, May.
Appreciate
man.
It, Greg. Take care of that cold now.
Oh, I will. I will definitely. And thank you, Kip. Great job again tonight. That's Kip Ione, the head men's basketball coach at Willamette University, as I said, in Salem, Oregon, the capital of the state of Oregon, and a great city, great university, fabulous university. I know so many people that have gone there, and they're my friends, and they just loved it. Good night, everyone, and don't forget to make all your free throws.